So good morning, everybody. It's Sunday in London, sometime towards the end of January 2019, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and Lizzie and I are here for Turning Towards Life, an hour earlier than normal. So we've got ourselves up especially early because I am not in my usual place. I'm in Hammersmith in West London, where we are running the third session of the year of our professional coaching course. So all of my timings are upside down and back to front today. So I'm really thrilled to be doing this again for the 60-somethingth week. I keep on thinking I ought to look at how many weeks we've been doing this. And one of the things I want to say just before we start is what a wonderful experience it was for me yesterday when we had on our third session of the professional coaching course, we invite people to come in as guest clients to be coached. And I got to meet in person for the first time some of you who are in this community with us and who follow and contribute regularly. And what a joy it is to turn names on Facebook into real people and to feel the realness. I know that for me, and I'm sure for you, I know for you, Lizzie, this feels really real, but the realness of this beyond the bounds of a Facebook stream and a Facebook page. So it's very special to be having this conversation today in the light of that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm thrilled, Justin, at that story of you meeting people. And I think I said this last week because we'd done our group in Hammersmith with Holly, and I'd met a very lovely one from this group. And I feel like something I was saying to someone the other day, I feel like Turning Towards Life has its own self now, that we are kind of in service to in some way, and that self comes from all the ways that everybody contributes and everybody comes to anything, you know, an event or something, we meet them, and then I can feel the spirit and the soul of the thing and the group, and it's just miraculous to me and wonderful, and I'm so glad that we do this and so grateful that we have this space each week. So everybody, you are very welcome here with us, and thank you for being willing to be in it with us and being interested in the conversations we have and curious. And thank you to us as well for keeping on and each week bringing these sources. I love yours, Justin, always. And I also, well, I love mine too, otherwise I wouldn't bring them. And, but it also encourages me to see the world in terms of sources as well. So, because I know we have this every week, I look in certain ways with what I'm reading and wonder what would be good, and that helps me read more and look at more and be curious more. So I'm really grateful for that as well.
Such a wonderful way of talking about it. Lizzie, I need to tell you that I think your microphone is brushing against just there, and it's a bit, makes it a bit crackly. Oh, your hair maybe. Okay.
I'll go like that a bit. That's better.
This source, I know you're going to say something about the source and reader, but this, just what you've said is very touching to me, because growing up in, for me, deeply immersed and committed to a Jewish spiritual path, and this text that you've chosen is right from the midst of that path from many centuries ago, that taking texts and then bringing ourselves to the texts in dialogue and grappling and wrestling with and teasing out hidden meanings that aren't just in the text but are in us is a really profoundly central part of the Jewish path. So just hearing you say back what we're doing reminds me in a way that feels really enlivening to me of, oh yes, this is also something that's been, is important to me, that goes back beyond my own life and to generations before. And here it is in this contemporary form, which isn't just a Jewish thing, of course, but I can feel the resonance with it. And it is, it's a fabulous way to look at the world, is to keep on finding things that people have written and said and made, and then holding them up to our lives and in our lives, and finding our lives reflected in and changed by them, which I think is this commitment that we're in.
Mm. And it's such a different thing. Like, you and I know each time, I think we've said it enough times here as well, that we don't plan what we're going to say. that there's a way that what gets born out of the conversation is always completely different to what I've thought about when I read it on my own and decided it would be a good source or whatever. It's always different.
Yes.
And I have a thought about it to begin with, but then it kind of shifts and changes because of what you say, and then that makes me say something, and that something different gets born because we're both in it.
Reminds me of something we've been talking about a lot over this session of the professional coaching course as well, which is that life is never one thing. Mm. We get so sure that life is this and I am this. And then if we're lucky, something like this comes along and we find out that it's vast and mysterious and has so many different ways of looking than we've ever seen before. And I think that's what's going on here too. Mm.
Okay, so I'm gonna read. So the funny thing is, Justin, as usual, I'm a bit of a, I don't know, not as well versed as you in where all these things come from, but because this is something that's appeared to me in a book that I'm reading, whereas you know the history of where it came from before it was in that book and whatever, which is just one of those things I have to accept about my life, that I'm not one of those more well-read people other than what I'm reading right now.
Well, I would say the only reason I know about it is that I read it and I could see that the title spelled out in English is actually a Hebrew phrase. And I thought, wow, that's... And then I had to look down to who wrote it. And the fascinating thing about who wrote it is it's clear that it's not clear who wrote it because there are two authors cited. It's either this one or that one. Judah Halevi, who's the first person, is a really, really well-known medieval Hebrew poet. And so I know about him just from my own history. So there was but I had never heard of Emmanuel of Rome. So I went and checked him out a little bit, found out a little bit about Emmanuel of Rome, who's quite interesting. But I love the fact that nobody really knows who wrote it. Now I did a bit of Googling around to see, well, who really wrote this? And the truth is, apparently no one's got a clue.
Yes.
But that's how I know a bit about
what we have Justin, who actually looks for these things, whereas I just look for the meaning of the thing. And that's enough wonderful. For me. But thankfully, Justin actually does the due diligence on all of these sources. Anyway, so we're going to read this lovely, short, sweet, pointy poem, I think you could call it. So I'm going to read first, Justin, and then I'm going to let it soak in when you read it as well. So for those who have died, these we remember. 'Tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch. To love, to hope, to dream, and oh, to lose. A thing for fools, this love, but a holy thing to love what death can touch. For your life has lived in me. Your laugh once lifted me. Your word was a gift to me. To remember this brings painful joy. 'Tis a human thing, love. A holy thing to love what death can touch.
So this is for those who have died. And the Hebrew title of it is Ela Ezkera, which means these we remember. 'Tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch. To love, to hope, to dream, and oh, to lose. A thing for fools, this love, but a holy thing. To love what death can touch. For your life has lived in me. Your laugh once gifted me. Your word, oh, your laugh once lifted me. Your word was a gift to me. To remember this brings painful joy. 'Tis a human thing, love, a holy thing. To love what death can touch.
So as you read that and I listen in to myself, I realize that mostly I'm just really scared of grief and death. And then when I hear this, something other than being frightened is allowed to be here, because there is a kind of validation of the riskiness of the way that I love people. And it calls it holy, which means it's not stupid. You know, it's like I sometimes think, well, this is too much. Like, I can't, if I think of what's actually going on here, which is I'm getting deeply attached and in love with people in the world, and I feel afraid when I feel into impermanence and the fact that we're all gonna one day die, maybe sooner, maybe later, who knows. It just feels like a silly thing to do because of the pain that I might encounter and that people are encountering all the time because of how we love one another. And so when this poem comes to me, it's like I'm, like you said, like it's not one thing, like another thing comes, that this is a wholly human thing. And somehow it widens my fear into something not only fearful, but also, I don't know, somehow more spacious, more acknowledged and validated, so that it can be like I can breathe in it, I can breathe into my life in this way, rather than just have this tension of like I'm just worried everyone's going to leave and I'm going to leave and then it's going to be nothing. And it just brings a different narrative to me to encounter the riskiness of the fact that we're all going to lose our bodies, and how would we even cope with that? Like, I don't even know. And then to be talked of in this way, which I don't experience this being talked about a lot. I feel like our culture completely avoids this. And so to be read something that actually speaks of the thing that really underlies so much in each of our lives, the fact that we will all lose everything and one another, there's a relief that comes over me, and then there's a conversation that can be had rather than my frozen fear and petrification and my big painful beating heart that can't really handle that fact.
You said one of the first things you said was, it's too much. And it seemed to me that's the move that's really required to be able to enter into this in the way that, I'm going to say it's Emmanuel of Rome, why not, invites us, is to be able to say it's too much. It really is too much to bear that everyone that we allow ourselves to love deeply, we will lose everyone. So before we even get to losing ourselves and all of that. And the reason I'm saying it that way is, I think it's only when we know that it's too much that we can start to engage with the possibility that we might even yet turn into it, that any other move where we go, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'll lose everybody I really love. It's fine. It's no big deal. No, it's the giantest deal. And maybe it's when and because we won't admit to that has us narrow our lives and shallow our lives and holds us back from really committing. When as long as I'm not prepared, it seems to me the two stages are, you know, one is in one way or another living with the acceptance of the loss that will come, but the other part of it is living with the giantness of it. How? What an earthquake that is. And that acceptance, if that's even the right word, or allowing for, doesn't involve minimizing. It can't. I can't be acceptance because I'll pretend that it's tiny. And then, of course, the author of this has done this exquisite work of reminding us that love and grief are the same thing. And that I recognize in myself also, Lizzie, what you said about it feels like a big piece of work of allowing for grief. And one of my experiences of grief, which was also one of my experiences of love too, is that it's way, for at least for a while, is it's way bigger than me. Like my fear, there's so many different angles to this. There's the being straight and honest about this is so big. And then there's the, can I allow myself to be swept over, to be overtaken by the magnitude of my grief, which I sometimes feel right in the midst of loving somebody who's still here, who's not, as far as I know, under threat, who's well, who's, I can feel the searing love and the searing grief are the same thing.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding that I have so much work to do with is the continual noticing how tightly I hold on that will not allow me to love fully, because I also don't want to abandon myself to for me, I think as much as anything else, it's the body thing. It's the surrendering to what my body will do when I grieve, that I will sob and shake and wail. And so there's part of me that learned very early on, no, but your body shouldn't do that. So, you know, keeping my body under wraps then keeps all of this, because this is, all of this is a bodily, all of it. And in those moments where I find the, I don't know what to call it, I was going to call it courage, but that's not the right word, openness maybe, to let myself feel all of this, then I really know that love is a holy thing. It's unlike, I imagine that the author of this wrote this in Hebrew, and the Hebrew word for holiness means something that is distinct, that is different, cannot be compared to anything else. Precious, yes, of course. Important, yes, but also its own thing. Love is not like other things. It hisses, and grief is not like other things. And so this move that says, where is it? Oh, it's in the last three lines. It's a human thing. Struck me for a while, and it's striking me again, that to love is one of the things that being human brings into the world that would otherwise not be here in this particular way. And it's our work, it's our gift to bring it. And grief is too.
I can't quite get away from this thing that you said about something being bigger than us. And how love is definitely, you know, the thing that takes me to actions I wouldn't ordinarily take, or to do things I wouldn't ordinarily do. And for me, that's the kind of pointer into the fact that with love and grief being the same, made of the same stuff, if I were to try and control something, like you said, you know, I don't want my body to move in this way, or I don't want to wail, or I'm not doing that, or I don't want to do that, it makes it so hard to fully experience how much we love someone if we're trying to control out of fear. our experience and our vulnerability around that. And of course, love is the most beautifully vulnerable situation to be in. And of course, all of our fearfulness will arise to the same degree. And so I feel like to love and to love fully in the full bare knowledge of this, that death can touch it. It really takes a kind of profound relaxation and letting go of my control mechanisms that hold me in a narrow place that feels safer and yet is not what it means to love. It's not what it means to fully behold another human extraordinariness of a person that's in my realm. And so I feel just very, yeah, in this moment, kind of affected by this, that there is something way bigger than my particular one thing about what life is right now, like way bigger, that to take part in it might feel like being washed around by a 10-foot wave where I don't know which way is up and I don't understand how I might breathe again. And maybe trusting that the wave was taking me into the shore or something. But it feels like in some way, like an unhuman thing. Like humanness feels kind of like, well, there's an edge to me in my humanness. My humanness has flesh and blood and breath and physicality to it. And love and grief feel like this particular structure of humanness has to work really hard to let go of its denseness in order to be able to let it flow through me and be of me, because it feels really big and really overwhelming and like, you know, triggers all my, I just want to hang on to people, for example, or I want to make an agreement that I'll die first so that we, you know, I don't have to have the feeling of losing someone else, or, you know, like ridiculous, undoable, unfollow-throughable suggestions. Like, it doesn't, none of it works. Like, I can't hold on to people. I can't make people not leave. I can't force anything. So it's all this one big, whopping great letting go of everything. And it feels really, really risky. And so I can find real compassion for the ways I try and control things or try and keep people close. Or like I've done this hilarious thing. I've written an actual, like, well, it's handwritten with pencils, but I've written a contract with both my niece and my nephew that I made them sign, saying that they'll always like basically be around and be kind and snuggly with me, even if they're 21 and being really moody. That kind of says it in the contract. And I'm like, I mean, it's a joke, and, you know, we laugh about it, and I bring it out when they're being moody and say, you still have to cuddle me, because look at the contract you signed. And then they kind of laugh and they're in a bad mood. It's like a really sweet thing, but I also know that it's also from a place of like, oh, they're gonna grow up and they're gonna be gallivanting around on on a plane somewhere without anyone, or in a job without anyone close by that knows them, or whatever. Mm. And it's like, I don't even know how any of us tolerate that. Our children moving on, or anyone near us who we love doing something different and being far away. And it's really, really hard and requires such a deep, profound letting go. And lots of the time, I don't even know if I'm capable of any of that. You know, I mean, I have a consciousness about it, and I'm sure I can practice, and I do practice.
Mm.
But in the kind of smaller moments, I'm like, no, none of that's happening. We're all closing the doors, battening down the hatches, and staying at home, and just being together all the time. And, you know, that clinging feels like a really strong thing for me.
The paradox of this, that is really coming to me as you're talking, is that God, I said there are many paradoxes in it, but one of them is that what's possible in love really emerges when we start to let go in the way that you're saying is so hard that we don't even know if we can do. And you were talking about, you know, these strategies that you won't have to lose people, like you'll die first, which had me thinking about one of the moments that I've talked about this before here, but the moment when I was most certain that I might die in the next couple of minutes, when I knew that there were blood clots moving. I was right, actually. I didn't die there. Of course, I'm here. You know that. But. And what I most felt in that minute was not this gets me off the hook for all the losses, but who I was about to lose.
Yeah.
Knowing that they might really be about to lose me, and all of the grief for me and them losing me, and all of my grief for me and losing them right in that moment. Mm. And then I was okay, and I could feel my love for them in a whole new way because of it. Mm-hmm. But I suppose I'm saying it that way because I think there's no way out. None of our strategies work. Not really. Mm. Which doesn't mean we don't have them. I don't mean it, you know, I don't mean it in that way. Mm. And when I manage to let go, what I find out is how much I can love. And I can love way, 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 way bigger. And it's extraordinary. The whole world is different from there. What I can do is different from there. Who I can be from other people is different from there. And I thought what you said about it being bigger than us, when you were saying that back, what I saw was, which I think is what the author of this beautiful piece is also saying, in calling it holy, is it is bigger than us. Like, love isn't just something that exists. If I love, like the way I love my immediate family, like the way I love my children, isn't something that I'm generating, like I generate a shopping list or, I can generate stuff that comes from me, but love is something already way, way bigger that we are in the middle of, not something we're making. As is grief, and that's the preciousness of it and the exquisite beauty of it, and also the difficulty of it, because as you say, both of them involve a huge letting go of having things our way, and they also involve a huge letting go of having, of holding on, built into them. And one of the reasons I think it's really difficult is that for most of us is, despite the fact that it is already really difficult, that we have to deal with feelings that we don't want to feel and being overwhelmed by something that's going to move through us, whether it's love or grief. Most of us don't live in a culture that tolerates loss of any kind. So our whole culture has been built on, I can have, I'm meant to have what I want.
Yeah.
If I don't have what I want, something is wrong. And my life has to be dedicated to getting what I want and then holding on to it. Mm. And there is no narrative in our wider contemporary culture that assaults us every day in advertising and the way the economy works. There is no narrative of loss as, in a way, I'm going to say this in a really weird way, but loss as holy and loss as beautiful. Loss is a punishment, or it's a your fault, or it's to be avoided, or it's a failure, or it's all of those kind of things. And none of that helps us with any of this.
Yeah. That's true. And mostly we feel ashamed if we lose something or we fail at something. We don't have an appropriate relationship culturally to loss that would have us learn. Right. We have it as like, oh, well, that's awkward. Don't know how to talk about that. So it kind of gets sealed. Like, I feel ashamed. People won't talk to me about it. So therefore I am exiled, rather than I feel ashamed. Somebody talks to me about it. It's not so bad. Maybe I can learn from what happened, or maybe it's a step in my journey or something. So that's really, I think it's really, really true. And I think that's why there's a relief that comes for me in this, because it faces something. This poem faces something that mostly we're all in denial about. And I remember, there's a particular exercise, isn't there, Justin, that we do on our year-long coaching thing. And it's some way to do with this. And I remember when I did that for myself, and I remember getting complete hysterical laughter because I was so glad, like prolongedly glad, that someone was acknowledging what I had been under the ground feeling and not being able to mention for such a long time, that we're all gonna lose one another and whatever. I just remember feeling like, thank God someone's talking about this. And I just couldn't stop laughing because I was so relieved. And I think that's what keeps happening again and again, when something under the cultural blanket gets kind of brought to the surface that we can talk about. I just experience this huge relief that we're in the conversation, and that it kind of paves the way that when things happen in this realm, I'm kind of paving the way for it to be spoken about and not just pushed under the carpet again, and me be lonely in my grief and pain without being able to bring it to relationship.
Yes.
So that feels like the gift of this to me.
I love this, what you're saying. So here's the thing I love about it. This particular thing that's really enlightening for me is when you say it's such a relief. And it struck me what a relief I feel being able to talk about it too. And the relief doesn't make any of it easier. So the mistake would be to go, oh, relief, you know, it would be another way out. So we're all kind of trying to find a way out of this, of having not to love too much and having not to face grief. And then one thing that could happen is go, well, we're talking about it, so that's a relief, so it's all okay. And we're going, no, it's not okay. It's really, really, really hard. It's impossibly hard. But it's such a relief to talk about it. And what I notice is that I feel joyful about talking about it. And I have very often, this might sound really paradoxical, that there are times, and now is one actually, when we're talking about it. And even though I know it's impossibly hard, and even I know that my grief is already and will be vast, and that I will lose everything and everyone, I can feel the joy that's right in the heart of it. Because there's also, it's also true that any of this is extraordinary, that we can feel such love, that we can feel such grief, that we will lose it all and it will be impossibly painful, is also life. Yeah. And so the relief also comes with a real being thrown into the flow of life. Like, that's one of the things that comes from the letting go, is here I am in life.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I'm in, like, oh, I've woken up to something, I'm in life, and it is exuberant and vibrant and life filled. And we, so many of us, so much of the time, are so used to going, no, 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 I'll avoid all of this. If I pretend it's not going to be there, I'll. But that also means that we can't feel the joy and aliveness and the tenderness and the preciousness and the holiness that's in it. It's really hard to get to all of that until we do this.
Absolutely. Well, it's 8:35, which means that we are coming towards the end of this. And I just want to say, I'm feeling like the possibility of me letting go and doing what I can to give up trying to control or minimize or contain my life in any way in this moment is feeling possible. Like, I could just relax a little bit more and have faith in the stream that will take me and is taking me and has already taken me. And let's just face it, I'm a goner, but still my little strong ways of trying to contain things and say no, and I don't like it and I don't want to. You know, I just feel like I can keep breathing today more into that space of trusting and not trying to make things that are big small, and make things that are uncontrollable controlled. And I'm really very grateful for that. Thank you.
Yes, me too. It's funny, isn't it? It's not what I'm going to say. It's not funny at all, but I'm just keep on being reminded that this is what we call this project, this community, this whatever it is, turning towards life. That's what we're doing. How about that?
Yes.
Excellent.
Tick.
I'm really, really grateful for that. And I'm going off now. I'm going to leave now and go and start the fourth day of this session of our professional coaching course with a exquisite group of people, and feel what a thing it is to go walk into that, feeling all of this, feeling the realness of things, I think, that's been brought by our conversation, by this source. So we will be back next week.
We will,
and it will be our 70th week. I looked it up. Week 70, and well, that's important because we have 10 fingers and 10 toes, and things that divide by 10 feel significant. So week 70. I hope probably at the usual time, right? 9 o'clock.
I think so. That's what will happen.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
See you.
Bye. Bye.